Uncensored 96. It took place March 24th, 1996, from the Tupelo Coliseum in Tupelo, Mississippi. It was attended by 9,000 people with a 0.7 buy rate, which amounts to about 250,000 buys. Matt, when I was doing research for this, I was not expecting that's a pretty high number.
Well, when you look at this main event and who's involved, I can see why so many people flocked to see this show. Although, as we're going to talk about, WCW started gaining momentum the moment Nitro went on the air.
Yep. Yep. We've kind of been talking about that since we started this retrospective last year or the year before. But as we're getting through, you're right, Bischoff is starting to gain momentum. And at this point, he already had Scott Hall committed. And eventually, within the next week, he would have Kevin Nash as well. So momentum was definitely carrying out here. And, you know, I've listened to him on podcast talk about this show, and he knew he had WrestleMania in a week. They didn't really want to go too far in with this. But you know what? I look at this main event, you're absolutely right. They kind of did. But, all right. So this wasn't your first time watching this show, obviously, right?
First time watching in its totality. I've seen bits and pieces. I've never actually watched the main event from beginning to end. I've only seen clips on like Botchamania and other things. But I know its reputation precedes itself. And I'm trying to sprint through these so we can get to the actually. Once we get to Bash at the Beach 96, these shows are going to become a lot more interesting. But we still got a couple. You can sort of see the tide is turning, but the wave doesn't hit the beach until we get there.
Yeah, this was a night of event watch for me. I did watch this when it was live. I believe I watched it at Adam's house, I want to say. I know next week's show was at my house. I had a huge thing at my house for WrestleMania. But this one, I believe this was me and Adam sitting down and watching this. And the catastrophe at the end. Oh my God, I cannot wait to get into this show. So, but yeah, this was, I believe we watched this on Adam's free box. He had a free black box at that time, and we took full advantage of that, for sure. All right, so the commentators we had here, we had Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Dusty Rhodes. You know what? I believe I've mentioned this on past shows. Matt, I feel these guys, this commentary team right here, I believe, is the most underrated commentary team of all time. And watching this show, man, there was some great back and forth between these guys. What do you think about this commentary team?
Well, I have a preconceived bias against three-person commentating booths, which is, I'm going to have to put that aside for the next five-plus years, because for the most part, that's what WCW ran with for the foreseeable time. And look, WWF/WWE had a history of it, but I think because these guys had different styles, and it's they don't have the issue that I have with a lot of three-person commentator teams where they talk over each other a lot and it feels like they're fighting to get their jabs in. I think this one, you're starting to see there's a formula being worked out. But to accompany the commentary booth, how crappy is this introduction video?
Oh, my God. Oh, yes. With all the echoes and everything. And you have Jimmy Hart just cackling. And you have Kevin Sullivan. Rest in peace, by the way. He's in the background just kind of cackling, too. Just saying, Doomsday! Doomsday! Yeah, this is a pretty shitty introductory video. what's also pretty shitty is, you know, I complimented this commentary team, but man, not a good opening here, as Tony Schiavone is kind of making fun of Bobby Heenan's jacket, and Bobby Heenan says it was like a $25,000 suit or something. This is not a very good introduction to this show.
Well, it still feels like they're in a transition where a lot of the jabs are pretty, they're not meant to like hurt or be digs. They're not explicit. They're still kind of, everything's still above board.
All right, speaking of above board, let's get to our opening match. We have Conan versus Eddie Guerrero. Conan's the United States champion. This is a United States title match. Boy, what a match this is. They lock up. Guerrero's working him into the corner, and he gets a waist lock in. Conan fights out of it and puts Guerrero in an arm bar and keeps it locked as he gets to his feet. man, these are two guys. You know, Conan, we're going to go back and forth on Conan. There are times when I really like him, and there are times, especially towards the end of WCW, where I don't think anybody gave a shit, but I think he especially did not give a shit. I like his work here, man. He was a technical marvel to watch in there.
He was, and this was before he transitioned his style a couple of years later when he started wearing the, because here he's wearing traditional lucha attire. A couple of years he'll be transitioning to like jeans and a tank, and because of that his style here is a lot more aerodynamic. Both of these guys could work on the mat, which helped. Despite both these guys kind of being trendsetters in lucha, and you're already starting to see Bischoff is laying the foundation for what he's going to do with starting with the whole cruiserweight division, which I don't think that has that belt been created yet.
Not yet.
Okay, so but you're seeing he's bringing in the talent that's going to make up that division.
Yeah,
you know, these two guys we're going to be seeing guys like Malenko and Benoit,
Mysterio,
and more luchadors for that matter. So you're seeing this is the template, you know, start the show off with these two guys, get the crowd all excited.
Yeah, you mentioned that cruiserweight division. It's interesting you mentioned that. I didn't even say that we had a few dark matches to start this show, and Dean Malenko was in one of them. He fought JL, who's Jerry Lynn, in a mask. They only had like a 3 minute 40 second match, and Malenko lost in that match. So they're definitely laying the foundation for what is definitely to come.
Yeah, you had four dark matches, and only one of them went over 5 minutes. And even that, it was just barely. It was like five and change.
Yeah,
but they gave these two guys almost 20 minutes to work with.
Yeah, definitely. So Guerrero's coming back. He hits a handspring off the top rope and takes Conan down to the mat. He kicks him in the head a few times and locks in a figure four. He releases the hold, and both men they get back to their feet. They exchange some near falls, but neither one really has a deep advantage here. Guerrero hits a snapmare and locks him in a chin lock, and Conan, he takes it into a leg lock and has Guerrero in a really hurt way here. He picks his legs up into a Boston Crab and keeps Guerrero grounded. So we're doing some rest holds, even though these are cruiserweights. But you know what? We've mentioned this in past shows, and it's going to keep coming up. But when used right, rest holds can be pretty effective in building the tension here.
Well, it helps counter when you see those more acrobatic stuff. Like there's a Hurricanrana spot later on. They mean more because it's a variety.
Exactly.
One of the things I hate about modern wrestling is when you have a match that's nothing but high spots, it's basically gymnastics with a referee.
Yes. Yeah, with no one really doing any selling or anything. It's just high spot after high spot. Yeah, that was really coming into fruition a few years down the line. Both men exchange quick arm drags and leg sweeps, and now we're at a stalemate again. Guerrero hits a drop kick before lifting Conan to the top, and he hits a Frankensteiner, but only gets a two count on it. Guerrero puts Conan in a camel clutch, but Conan's powering out of it, sends him to the outside of the ring. Guerrero gets back in the ring, and they exchange some arm drags once again, and it sends Guerrero crashing to the outside. He gets back in the ring, and Conan continues working on the arm and stretches Guerrero out in the middle of the ring. That looked painful, man. Those big stretches, oh my God, wrestled or not, those look fucking painful. Guerrero fights out, and he hits another arm drag, sends Conan to the outside. Eddie Guerrero perches up on the top rope, but doesn't come to the outside. Conan gets back in, does a monkey flip, but Guerrero lands on his feet. Head scissors by Guerrero sends Conan right back to the outside of the ring, and Eddie follows him outside with a splash. That was a nice spot.
Yeah, and then he gets slammed from the top like he's Ric Flair.
I know. He rolls back in the ring, hits a splash from the apron, but Conan gets his foot on the ropes. Guerrero locks his legs around the head of Conan, but he fights out and puts Guerrero in a submission of his own. We get a German suplex by Conan, and he goes for a second near fall, but Guerrero rolls him up for another near fall. Conan gets up, hits a clothesline, covers for another two count. Guerrero hits a Hurricanrana, which was the spot you were talking about, but it's not enough for the win. Conan comes back to his feet, hits a crucifix powerbomb, which, god damn, those fucking powerbombs. You know, and when you think about it, like, draws would get hurt a few years later, and they would really kind of hold off on the powerbombs. But when back then, these things just, they look like they hurt. I don't care if it's fake or not.
Well, this was at a time where a lot of, I mean, look, Diesel, Vader, Sid, most of the people that did power bombs were your giants.
Yeah.
But to see a guy who is considerably smaller than them do a power bomb, it's almost more impressive.
Exactly. Yeah. Conan goes to the top rope, but Guerrero follows him up, but is shoved to the outside. Conan comes through the ropes with a suicide dive and tries to suplex Guerrero back in, but he slips. Guerrero hits some offense, but Conan takes him out with a clothesline. He goes back up to the top rope, but Guerrero's right behind him. Hits a superplex. I always love seeing those superplexes. I love the sound of the mat when they hit the mat for those superplexes. Oh, superplex is one of my favorite moves. He covers Conan, but he gets the shoulder up at about 2 3/4. Guerrero goes back up to the top rope again, but ends up rolling Conan up for a 2 count. Conan throws him into the ropes, but he reverses it and goes to hit a move. But here we go. Here's the ending of the match. He comes down on Conan's head, essentially giving himself a low blow, which was weird. Guerrero was then taken out, and Conan covers him for the win to retain the title at 18 minutes and 27 seconds. I got to tell you, Matt, you know, for a show called Uncensored, this was a really good wrestling match. There were a lot of really good moves here. I was really into it, but goddamn, this ending sucked.
Yeah, it's a flat finish, but it's also a babyface versus babyface match, which was also a weird dynamic. And you're right, Uncensored, you think all these matches would have either no rules or dusty finishes, but this is an outlier, but I'm not going to let it tarnish the match. It almost looks like a botch more than anything, because there are a couple, it seemed like there were a couple miscues.
Yeah.
And like, the back half.
Mm-hmm. In the post-match, Conan's helping Guerrero to his feet, but Guerrero's pushing him away. They argue about the low blow being intentional or not, and then they go to the replays. We cut to Mean Gene Okerlund. He's backstage talking more about the WCW hotline. Big thing for Mean Gene. I know me and my friend Omar called this hotline a few times. They show the giant on a computer, which was weird.
Yeah, and you know, the guy who was the world champion, was part of the Dungeon of Doom, is not booked in the main event.
Then we get Colonel Robert Parker and Dirty Dick Slater. They join Mean Gene, and Parker says that Gene should have some gratitude for all he has done, and he is fighting a woman tonight for everybody that has ever wanted to. Boy, this ages well.
Yeah, this is not the Beulah McGillicuddy Bill Alfonso match that we see.
No.
Where it was just, I still can't believe they did that.
I can't either. No, I remember that angle being in all the magazines I was reading at the time. I was like, holy shit, like that's nuts. Slater then grabs the mic and says that every man should know that Parker's doing this for them. And then Parker says that he is the rooster and he's going to prove it tonight. What an odd fucking interview segment this is.
Well, they're still stuck in that, like, between this and the Dungeon of Doom, they're still acting like it's the 80s.
Yep. So we then get Lord Steven Regal versus the Belfast Bruiser, a.k.a. Fit Finlay, with Dusty Rhodes calling Jeeves Chives for some reason the entire match.
Yeah, I remember this is the match where Dusty cannot say Gluteus Maximus to save his own life.
This has some of the funniest commentary.
I counted at least 4 instances where he just could not say it.
The match starts quickly with Finlay knocking Regal down to the mat with a hard shot. He works him into the corner and unloads on him with a few shots. He throws Regal into the ropes, but he reverses it and hits a power slam, covers him for a 2 count while he rubs his elbow into his nose. Finlay takes back control with a punch to the midsection, hits a solid clothesline, covers Regal for a 2 count. One thing I'll say about this match, Matt, these two beat the living hell out of each other.
Oh, yeah, this is stiff with a capital S, but what's important is Regal is such a good seller.
Yeah.
And it's those little things, like the way he sells like a elbow shot to the forehead, or he gets dropped, thrown it onto the rail at one point.
Yeah.
He was, yeah, breathe. Like, this is, as close to Strong Style as you get in this era without it actually turning into a shoot fight. Can we talk about Finley's ridiculous outfit?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
It looks like a hybrid of the Road Warriors mixed with, he's got like a biker jacket, he's got this ridiculous mullet mustache combo.
Yes, yes.
This is not a good look for him at all.
Nope. So, Finley kicks Regal in the back, works him into the corner once again. Regal comes back with a European uppercut, which Regal always used, and starts working on his neck. The Bruiser takes back control with a knee to the head, snaps him over to the mat. He throws Regal out of the ring, follows him up with a blow to the back. He picks him up and drops him throat first on the guardrail. Finley then slams Regal's shoulder into the post and stomps on his back. Regal gets back in the ring, and then Finley continues working on the arm. Regal's fighting out of it and blasts him in the face. He then hits a drop kick, which was weird. I don't think I've ever seen Regal do a drop kick.
No, and he got more elevation than I thought he would.
Yeah, same here. Bruiser hits an elbow to the head, which was probably the move you were talking about. And then he takes Regal down to the mat with an armbar. Regal makes his way back up to his knee, starts pounding away on the face of Finley. They exchange blows as they get back to their feet. And this is another match. Fun commentary, as you mentioned. Like, these guys are loving this match as it goes on. Finley's hitting a scoop slam, and then he hits a senton for a two count. He puts Regal in a chin lock, but Regal comes back with an elbow to the head. Finley's dazed for a moment, but hits a big clothesline out of the corner. He slams Regal's head on the apron and hits him with an elbow and slams him into the guardrail. Then Regal hits a shot and sends Finley back in the ring, but as he is coming in, he gets kicked in the face. Finley tries to suplex him inside, but Regal blocks it and suplexes him to the outside, which you don't see too often. That was crazy.
Tease this move, but you never actually see it happen.
Yeah, exactly. Regal hits a shot to the chest as he tries to get back, and he hits some elbows. Finley fights out again, kicks Regal right in the back with some power. Regal works him into the corner, distracts the referee so he can hit a low blow. Regal then gets a kick in of his own, and Finley gets back to his feet, only to be taken down again. Regal continues pounding on the head, but the Bruiser gets back up and hits a back body drop. Finley then hits a double leg takedown, but Regal fights out and covers for a two count. And then Regal starts talking some trash as Finley punches him square in the jaw. I mean, that looked nasty.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he lays one in really thick to the point where he starts bleeding it a little bit.
Yep. Yeah, I believe Regal busted his nose in this, I believe.
Yeah, he broke his nose.
Mm-hmm. Finley brings Regal to the outside, slams him on the apron, and rolls back into the ring. Regal is bleeding at this point, as you mentioned, and he rolls Finley back into the ring, works him over with some more shots, but Regal pulls down the door. Both men are on the outside as Regal sends him flying into the cage that is set up in the aisleway. The Blue Bloods come down the aisle, which is David Taylor and Earl Robert Eaton, a.k.a. Beautiful Bobby Eaton. They come to the ring and attack the Bruiser, which results in a disqualification after 17 minutes and 33 seconds. Matt, this is two matches in a row. It's been very entertaining for almost 20 damn minutes, and then we get a fucking disqualification or a false finish. It sucks.
Yep, this is the M. Night Shyamalan of pay-per-views thus far.
Yes. I hated this. I mean, I love this match. Don't get me wrong. This is one of the most entertaining matches I've ever seen in this era. But good God, if you could, these two bastards could fight like this, why not give them a good finish? So, post-match, we're seeing them continue brawling up the aisleway. Meanwhile, Mean Gene, he's backstage with the Giant and Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart says that he will prove to everyone why he is the greatest manager in the history of wrestling. And Mean Gene says that the winner of the Giants match tonight against Loch Ness will get a shot at the WCW heavyweight title tomorrow on Nitro against Ric Flair. So they are doing a pay-per-view, and they're promoting Nitro. This was something that Bischoff kind of started. How do you feel about this? I mean, you're paying $30 for this pay-per-view, and they're advertising a free world title match the next night.
Well, I feel like this one was logical because the world title was not being defended on this show. In fact, There's only one title match, and it was the opener. But it's a good lead-in because you need to. It's the only way you were going to make people care about You're this right. actual number one contender match.
The Giant says he is coming for the title and that he will destroy Loch Ness tonight in order to get it. Gene, once again, he starts shilling the hotline. And then he brings in Loch Ness. Now, Loch Ness calls Jimmy Hart a weasel face. And he said regardless of what Hart does to him, he is going to beat the Giant tonight. He says that he can't say what he's going to do to the Giant because it won't be allowed on TV. And then he stares at Mean Gene, who tells him that he knows a number to a good friend of his who's a dentist. Which was an amazing ad lib. If you see the Loch Ness's teeth. Oh, man, this was not really, I mean, it's not a really good backstage interviewing segment, but Mean Gene makes it entertaining for me. We cut to the next match, Matt. We have Colonel Robert Parker versus Medusa. This is the type of match I would expect on Uncensored.
Yeah, and this is where the slide really? Begins.
I'm not sure about that. Well, I guess we'll talk as we go here. Now, let's talk about this. We talked way back when we did Starrcade 95, that a little before that, Medusa had thrown the WWF title belt into the garbage can and said this is where the big ladies play as well. And with the exception of a pretty entertaining segment that you and I talked about when she interrupted Colonel Robert Parker's wedding, which is why we're getting this match, she hasn't really done much, has she?
No, she, because she was promised there'd be a viable women's division, and we're still not there yet. In fact, I don't think WWE would ever 100% get there.
So the match starts off. We have Colonel Robert Parker. He locks up, which Dusty Rhodes really, really found entertaining, that Parker would actually lock up with her. Medusa takes him over to the mat with an arm drag, and both of them get back to their feet. Medusa cannot keep a straight face during this, though. She's having the time of her life in this match.
But also, the whole thing of this is weird because, to remind everyone, apparently she was messing around with Parker behind Sherry's back. And Medusa is portrayed as a babyface here. Like, we had a face versus face match. This should be heel versus heel.
Parker picks Medusa up in a fireman's carry, but she slips out and rolls him up for a two count. She picks him up for a scoop slam and sends him down to the mat. Parker goes to the outside, and he's met by Dick Slater. He gives Parker a pep talk and gets him back in the ring. Parker slams her down with a chokehold and goes for an elbow, but she rolls out of the way, hits a couple drop kicks. Medusa then climbs to the top rope, hits a splash to the outside, but it had the softest landing because Parker actually caught her as she came down. They get back to the ring. She hits a German suplex and covers him, but Slater, of course, pulls her leg, those damn dirty heels. Parker then covers her to get the win at 3 minutes and 47 seconds. I found this match entertaining for what it was. I mean, like I said, this is Uncensored. So this is the type of stuff I was expecting. But still, I mean, you're not going to get any really big wrestling in this match. I thought it was entertaining for what it was. What about you? Yeah, good call. Yep.
At least it was short. I think that's the best thing I could say. Like, they kept this to 4 minutes, and that was it. But this is the third match where it's either been a dusty finish or you've had someone run in.
Yep. We cut to backstage with Lee Marshall. He's with the Road Warriors, and Hawk starts to say something, but Animal cuts him off. Animal says that they are going to kick everyone's butts in WCW, and they will destroy Booker T and Sting in the street fight tonight. Hawk says that...
All right, There is way too many backstage segments on this
Between,
show.
Yeah.
And or interviews. Like, there's one, sometimes multiple, in between matches.
I didn't think there was... I guess there are too many. Because when you go backstage... Look, if you go backstage between every match, and it's like one interview segment, I'm okay with that. But you hit it for me. When it starts becoming two or three backstage segments in this pay-per-view, that's when I start getting annoyed. Hawk says that they will remove their brain stems and they always get the job done. Hawk says that no one will be able to save them because there is no holds barred. We then get a commercial for Slamboree 96, Matt. Can't wait to get to that one.
I can't.
Speaking for stuff we can wait for, this next match was going to be an I Quit match between Diamond Dallas Page and Johnny B. Badd. Johnny B. Badd didn't really have a contract. He was being paid per appearance. And when he went to Bischoff for a contract, Bischoff said he didn't really want to pay him. So he went to the WWF, got a good offer, and we will talk about his first appearance in WWF next week. But as a result of Johnny B. Badd leaving, Matt, we get a match between the Booty Man.
Yep, Hogan and yep. Friends.
The Booty Man.
And much like next week, this is one of those instances where you look at a future guy who would be one of the pillars of this company having to eat shit and like the taste of it.
Brutus Beefcake, who at this point, by my count, has gone through about a dozen identity changes. And is revealed in between this pay-per-view and the last pay-per-view we covered that he was somehow a spy being put in by Hogan in the Dungeon of Doom, which makes no sense whatsoever. And he is here taking on Diamond Dallas Page, who, as you mentioned, will become a pretty big part of this company in the next few years. All right, let's get into it. So Page jumps out of the ring to start the match and starts mouthing off to the crowd. He eventually gets back into the ring and they lock up, with Booty Man getting an early advantage. He hits Page with a shoulder block that knocks him out of the ring. Page gets back in the ring, but he is met with a right hand by Booty Man. I can't believe I'm saying that phrase. I'm just going to say Beefcake.
Yeah, and 3 years, look, a couple years
you're
later,
right.
You'd have
you're
Mr.
Right.
Ass
I'm just
going to
say Beefcake. Beefcake continues working on the arm and takes Page down to the mat. As Page gets back to his feet, he misses Beefcake into the corner and is sent flying to the outside again. Page walks up the aisleway, but Beefcake chases him out and he pummels him on the way to the ring. He slams his head on the apron, rolls him back into the ring with Page backing off. Page then pulls him into the corner and takes advantage with some elbows to the head. Beefcake comes back and pounds Page's head into the turnbuckles, and this makes Page fall out of the ring once again. Beefcake brings him back in, but he is hit with a double axe handle. Beefcake gets back to his feet, hits Page with some kicks to the midsection. Both men, they're running the ropes, and Beefcake takes him down, covers for a two count. Beefcake comes off the ropes with a crossbody, but Page ducks, and Beefcake hits the mat. Page hits a belly-to-back suplex and covers him for a two count. He then puts on a chin lock, and the referee drops Beefcake's arm, but he gets it up before it falls for a third time. He tries to make a comeback, but Page hits him with a knee that takes him down. Beefcake gets back to his feet, attempts another comeback, but Page drops him throat first on the top rope. He then grabs Kimberly, who's his wife, in real life, and kisses her, but she slaps him, and Beefcake hits a really weak-looking high knee to pick up the victory at 16 minutes. Your winner, the Booty Man. Boy, you're right. Page really did have to eat shit and like it here, didn't he?
Yeah, and again, they just... Whoever thought this should have gotten 15 minutes, I question their logic. This whole thing was, it's not the low point of the show, but you're starting to lose my goodwill that you built up for the first portion.
You know, it just makes me think, A, would this have been better with Johnny B. Badd in place of Beefcake? I think the answer is yes, for
yes.
sure. But is this, like, supposedly the Booty Man was a name given by Hogan. I mean, was it just the huge amounts of gimmicks being exchanged here that really threw this off? Because, I mean, Page is really finding himself at this point. He wouldn't really, really be a huge star until, you know, about 7 months after this. So right now he's a mid-carder at best. But if these two can't put on a good match, like, why even bother? This, at least, as you mentioned, don't make it 16 fucking minutes. So, post-match, Beefcake is kissing Kimberly, and she is blown away by the kissing. And I will say, you know, as bad as this match was, I love the commentary during it. Like, fucking Heenan is having an absolute fucking blast. Like, they show Kimberly on the outside, and he just looks and says, "Oh, you don't know who you're going home with tonight." Things like that really made me laugh. Doug Dillinger comes down to the ring because Paige is losing it after the decision, and then they go to replays. So we go back, once again, we go backstage with Mean Gene. He's back there with Lex Luger and Jimmy Hart. Hart says it's a sad night because this will be the last time he walks with Luger down to the ring. And then he presents Luger with a t-shirt and says that he loves him before walking away. Luger says that he is caught between a rock and a hard place. He says this cage match tonight will be the most dangerous match he will ever be a part of. Luger says that he regrets the fact that he has to leave Sting to wrestle by himself, but he said he's going to be watching his back all night long.
Well, if Lex waited 8 months, him and Jimmy could have gone, and he would have been stuck in the WWF between the Rock and a Hart place.
Well played, sir. Versus Loch Ness, who, this was a guy who had a pretty prominent career in Europe. At this point, he was right at the tail end because he had just contracted cancer. He wouldn't last a year after this night. But you know what, man? This match is garbage. Like, Loch Ness is tripping on a cable just getting into the ring. So, how good of a...
Yeah, and there's a spot, there's a bump Giant takes where I'm surprised he was able to walk.
Giant comes in, hits a knee, starts chopping Loch Ness in the corner. He gets a boot to the throat, but Loch Ness comes back with a thumb to the eye and a headbutt. He drives Giant's head into the corner, but the Giant comes back and starts slamming his head instead. The Giant comes with a splash in the corner, but Loch Ness moves, and the Giant is sent out of the ring. Look, a very impressive bump there by the Giant, I will say.
Yeah, but he's killing himself with this crap.
You're right. You're right. He's trying his best to make this guy look good.
Yeah, he is. He is in the early 90s Undertaker phase where he's fighting Monster of the Week and is doing everything he can to try and sell it.
Well, let's not forget, he himself hasn't even been in the business for 6 months at this point.
No,
so.
but he's gone from being world champion to this.
Yeah, you're right. Although he would get the belt back the next night. The Giant gets back in the ring but gets taken down with a chop. Loch Ness hits an elbow and then goes for another one, but the Giant moves out of the way. He hits a clothesline and kicks Loch Ness to the ground and hits a leg drop, which I thought was an interesting spot. He covers him and picks up the win at 2 minutes and 34 seconds. Not much to talk about here. I don't know. Do you have anything else to say about this match?
At least it went 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, at least when it's really bad, with the exception of the last match, it goes short. All right, so Lee Marshall, he's backstage, and he's talking up the Chicago Street fight coming up next. Booker T and Sting, they join him, with Booker talking about taking the Road Warriors out and getting Harlem Heat a chance at the tag team titles. Sting says that Booker came from the street, and he shouldn't forget that, especially come out on top. Couple things here. Look, I have established on this podcast, and I will continue establishing for every event we cover, Matt, in WCW, I am a Sting mark. I like just about everything the guy does. But him talking jive in this fucking interview is ridiculous. But one other thing I'll say, and I think you've known me, Matt, you've known me for over 10 years now. We haven't really talked wrestling on the air that long, but we've talked wrestling off air a lot. I am a sucker for can you or can you not trust your partner? You know, and you look at Sting and Booker T, that is not, especially in 1996. I mean, Booker T was still in Harlem Heat at this point, wasn't really an established single star. And here they are teaming together because Luger is doing his own thing. I thought this was something they could really play off of, but with the exception of Sting and Booker T both leaving the ring for a couple instances, like, they don't really build on that, do they?
That's then why you're such a mark for Sting, because he gets his partners turn on him constantly. Like he is WCW what Tommy Dreamer is in WCW, where everybody turns on him at some point. So the fact that he doesn't turn on him in this match is the most surprising thing.
Either that or how long it is. Let's get into it. So Chicago Street Fight. Chicago Street Fight with Sting and Booker T. They're taking on the Road Warriors. And if Sting and Booker T win the match, Harlem Heat gets a shot at the tag team titles. So the Road Warriors bring the fight early in the aisle way. Sting and Animal, they're going back and forth as Booker and Hawk, they're on the outside of the ring. Animal slamming Sting's head into the corner and goes up for the 10 punches that we've seen over and over. Hawk flips Booker T over on the outside. All four get back in the ring, and Booker hits Animal with a scissors kick. Animal comes back with a power slam, but only gets a two count. Animal drops Sting's head on the top rope, pulls him crotch first into the ring post. Ow. Booker takes Hawk down, but he recovers and starts working Booker over with some chops. Booker wraps Animal's leg around the ring post, and Sting comes in and hits him with some punches to the head. Hawk no-sells a pile driver on the floor, but Booker takes him down with a clothesline. Now, we've talked about Sting and Booker T. Let's talk about the Road Warriors. Now, the Road Warriors were another team. I grew up just, goddamn, they were amazing when in their prime. I loved watching the Road Warriors. They had a theme song that I know the network doesn't play, but it's one of my favorite entrance themes of all time. It was amazing. It was like a version of Iron Man that they came out to. Amazing team. But by this point, they were a couple years past their prime, maybe a few years past their prime. And this is what they resorted to. They would do it when they went to WWF too, where they would just do Chicago street fights all the time. I don't know. Matt, are you a fan of the Road Warriors?
I think at this point, the wheels are starting to come off the wagon. I mean, we'll see. Even when they jump ship, they couldn't really bump as well as they used to. There's parts in this match where Animal forgets how to sell. So,
yeah,
it's not great. And the fact that this goes damn near a half hour, and we have a Chicago street fight in Mississippi.
Animal hits a clothesline on Sting on the inside and covers him for a two count. Sting comes back with his bulldog, but Hawk breaks up the pin attempt. He starts choking Sting while Animal throws Booker T to the outside. Sting and Hawk, they go outside as well, and all four men are beating each other up in the guardrail. By the guardrail, Booker T rolls Animal into the ring, comes off the top rope, but Animal hits him in the midsection. Animal gets a drop kick in, covers Booker T for a two count. Hawk and Animal, they double team Sting on the outside before Hawk comes back over to continue beating on Booker. Booker gets Hawk in an armbar as Animal and Sting, they go to the entranceway. Sting hits him with a chair and makes his way back to the ring. He then hits Hawk with the chair, and Animal makes his way into the ring and grabs the chair Sting threw away. Animal takes out both men with the chair and covers Booker, but only gets a two count. Booker T then hits a sidekick on Animal, and Sting drills Hawk with a pile driver, and that he once again no-sells, as you mentioned. Matt, what do you think about the double screens here? They split this action up where, you know, we have Sting and Hawk fighting in one place, and Animal and Booker fighting another way, and they split the screen.
I liked
up.
It better what when do I could do this that? On the Nintendo 64 playing multiplayer. I hate this split screen crap.
I do too. It's a big reason why I'm not a fan of. That's the big reason why I don't get like the NFL, red zone thing too. I just hate watching multiple things at the same time. Hawk hits a power bomb on Sting, but he doesn't cover him in favor of dealing more damage. Animal is choking Booker T on the outside with a cable as Hawk is choking Sting on the inside. Hawk tosses Sting to the outside and throws him over the guardrail. Hawk continues beating Sting up amongst the fans as Animal tosses Booker T into the ring post. Hawk then grabs a chair and hits Sting over the head with it. Boy, remember when you could do chair shots?
Yeah, and every time I watch this, I'm like, oh boy, wonder how many repressed concussions these guys have had that we just don't know about.
Booker T recovers and comes off the apron with a splash on both men. He throws Animal into the ring and Sting throws Hawk in as well. Booker and Animal, they come out the other side, and Animal throws Booker T into the cage in the aisleway. Hawk takes Sting down with a clothesline. Hold on. Okay.
Sorry. When you have a match that's 30 minutes long, it's very easy to get lost.
I know. They both collide, and Sting gives Animal a low blow after falling headfirst into him. I always love that spot. Sting did that spot a lot, where somebody would, like, beat him up in a corner and Sting would knock him down out of the corner, and then Sting would just fall right on their crotch. He did that a lot. Sting continues beating on Animal, but it isn't for long, and Animal is back choking him. Hawk throws Booker into the corner, but he hits an elbow as Hawk charges in. Sting comes off the top rope with a splash, but Animal moves. Meanwhile, Hawk, he goes to the top, but Booker T catches him with a drop kick on the way down. Animal hits a stiff uppercut to Booker T and continues to pound him into the corner. Booker T comes over the top rope with a splash, but hits nothing but mat, and Animal starts beating on him once again. Sting and Hawk, they exchange some blows in the ring as Booker T and Sting double team him and take him down. They both get suplexes on both members of LOD, and Animal comes back with one of his own. Booker T chops Animal on the inside and goes for a Harlem sidekick, but Animal ducks and he hits the top rope. Hawk comes off the top with a clothesline, but both men are spent. By this point, we're, what, 20 minutes in? Like, it just keeps going. Sting throws Animal into the guardrail, but Booker T takes Hawk back down in the ring. He locks Hawk into the camel clutch as Sting pulls Animal to the outside. Hawk fights out and kicks Booker T in the chest. Sting hits a scoop slam and elbow in the ring on Animal. He climbs up the top, but Animal reverses his crossbody into a power slam for the two count. Hawk and Animal, they double-team Booker T on the outside as Sting walks up the aisleway. Again, they're kind of teasing that these two guys don't like each other. They only go through with it. You know, I just hate. No. Hawk hits a power slam, but only gets a two count. Sting comes back with two brooms in his hand and takes out both men with him. Animal gets a hold of the brooms and hits Sting and then Booker in the back with them. He gives the other one to Hawk, and he continues to beat Booker T up with it. Booker T takes Animal out with a shot to the back and starts choking him with part of the broom. Hawk comes off the top rope with a splash on Sting, but he kicks out after two. Animal and Booker T, they go to the backstage area, and Booker T ducks under, and Animal hits Lex Luger, who's kind of a bystander.
Yeah, he's just looking at himself in the mirror.
Luger, Jimmy Hart, and Stevie Ray and Booker T, they handcuff Animal, which leaves Hawk to fend for himself. Booker T comes back to the ring and goes to the top rope, but he misses the Harlem Hangover. Stevie Ray is out. He comes to the ring and hits Hawk with a chair, and Booker T covers him to pick up the win at 29 minutes and 33 seconds. You know what, Matt? I was with this match for about 15 minutes of it. 20 minutes of it, I was like, okay, I was still taking my notes. Obviously, I took rigorous notes here. But I was like, okay, let's get this over with. Then it went another 15 minutes. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I mean, I'm all for giving these guys as much time as you can to build up a story, but there was no story going on here.
This was doing stuff just for the sake of doing it. And I don't know if I've seen a 30-minute match where it looked like half the guys in the match did not care. This reminds me, like, this is
it's weird because
there was a WrestleMania match we'll get to in 30 years. Both in time and in podcast history, where the guys went like 40 minutes for a last man standing match, put in the effort, but it's just so long. But a lot of this is doing nothing for the entire time. Like, it doesn't really become a street fight until the last like 10 minutes.
Yeah. And, you know, it reminded me of another match that Sting was involved in with the Road Warrior, with one of the Road Warriors, actually. He teamed up with Hawk to take on the Nasty Boys in Starrcade 93. But it was another one. I think it went about 25 minutes. There was nothing really happening. It's like, Jesus Christ, guys. I mean, I'm all for building a story. I'm all for long matches when they build to something, but it didn't build to anything. And that's my big issue with this match. It didn't build to anything. And as it is, we get this little bit of a story with Luger in the backstage area. What does this prove?
Yeah, and the baby faces, you know, still had to cheat because they used underhanded tactics because they cuffed. But Stevie Wright was not in the match.
Yeah, and I hate going low with 30-minute matches because I know these guys worked hard. But as you mentioned, it didn't seem like there was an end game, and it didn't seem like they really cared anyway. So, gosh, could have been so much better. All right, but could this next match be much better? before we get there, we have Stevie Ray backstage hitting Animal with this chair, and Sting and Booker, they go to the back as they show replays of the match. So, all right, Matt, you
Someone
ready?
Should have asked the booking team before they put this together if they were ready.
Oh, my God. So this next match, it's a Doomsday Cage match we've been building up to. We got the Mega Powers, Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage, a team that, my God, Matt, 9 years before this, holy shit, was it a moment when they joined hands. And that's another one we'll get to probably in 40 years. But just unbelievable when these two first joined forces. Now, they're going up against the Alliance and Hulkamania, which contains Nature Boy Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, the Taskmaster, Lex Luger, Ming the Barbarian, Z Gangsta, a.k.a. Zeus, and the Ultimate Solution with Elizabeth Woman and Jimmy Hart on the outside.
Thank God they changed that name, because remember, they ran with something else initially, and somebody had the wherewithal to say, let's not do the Final Solution.
Yeah, they definitely changed that, for sure. That was a good choice.
A lot of
and you know who this guy is, right, Matt?
We got, let's see, the star of Suburban Commando, we got the star of No Holds Barred, and we got one of the stars from Batman and Robin.
Yes. We covered him years ago when we did Batman and Robin. He played Bane. I mean, one more thing I wanted to talk about before I get into it is Brian Pillman was originally booked for this match. But by this point, he had already left the company. So, once again, he kind of worked over everybody.
He saw the morning side.
And he refused to lose to Hulk Hogan. Yeah. He refused to lose to Hulk Hogan. So, he took that. I believe it was the first guaranteed money that Vince McMahon ever gave out was to Brian Pillman.
Yeah, I think Triple H and Shawn Michaels tried the same thing, right. But nobody out politics Hogan, brother.
You're not kidding. Here we go, Goudreau. They start in the top tier of the cage, and it's Savage and Hogan, and Anderson. Savage
before
is
we get into the match itself, this structure looks awesome if you're watching from your television. I cannot imagine sitting in this arena trying to figure out what is happening.
Not to mention, I mean, this isn't even at the ring. Like, if you got front row tickets, you're fucked at this main event. You have to turn around and look at this the entire fucking time. And the way these guys had to gingerly move along in this cage, I mean, I could not fucking imagine even being one of the athletes in this cage.
Why is Arn Anderson dressed like me when I go grocery shopping on a Sunday afternoon?
I was wondering that too. Maybe it was because he knew he had to fall on his back, and he wanted to have something to fall on or whatever. Like, he didn't want to fall with his skin on that cage. I don't blame him. But Jesus Christ, you're right. I thought they were going for when we talked about we haven't talked about it yet. But remember when Hogan had the assassin who came out and hit him in the leg, and it turned out to be Beefcake?
Yeah, I thought they were going for that again. Smuggles in a weapon. Seven on eight or two on eight, whatever the handicap is, isn't enough. So there's a lot of dumb shit we're going to get into, but it starts immediately. If you are structuring this like it is literally the end all be all to destroy Hulkamania, why would you not say, if you're the bookers, why are you not ending with Flair and Anderson? Like you're literally blowing your load. It's like having the final boss first. Because this is the Donkey Kong of matches, except Donkey Kong is fun to play.
Another thing I will say, though, again, I think the commentary in this match is amazing.
They fucking try.
Like, they tried really hard. And Dusty is going on about, if you have a chain link fence, take it apart and lay on it. This is when Flair has the figure four on, and Heenan goes, and then pull your neighbor out and put the figure four on.
Here's the thing. Unlike a Hell in a Cell or a steel cage match, there's no mat for the majority of this match. In fact, there's no mat at all. So you're extremely limited with what you can do from a moveset standpoint. That's why 90% of this actually benefits Hogan, because it's punch, kick, chop. So the fact that there's dueling figure fours, that's the most elaborate thing you will see in this match, especially when you look at guys like the Ultimate Solution and Z Gangsta the moveset of your base creator wrestler on SmackDown versus Raw, where you start with like five moves and that's all you can do.
Savage is working on Flair as Anderson and Hogan, they're going at it. They start to double team Flair, but Anderson breaks it up. Flair slams Savage into the cage, but Savage recovers and just starts beating on Anderson. Flair and Hogan, they're face-to-face, and Flair gets a thumb to the eye. Hogan tears the shirt off and comes alive as Flair chops him. Savage is raking Anderson's face against the other side of the cage, and then Flair and Anderson, they start to double-team Savage after Flair takes Hogan down. They didn't go when they once again go to the split screen as Anderson's working on the leg of Hogan, and Flair puts the figure four on Savage. Hogan and Savage, they both roll the moves over, and this makes Flair and Anderson break the holds.
I never understand this spot of just because you flip over a figure four, the pressure gets applied to the other person. That makes no fucking sense.
Well, when you come to the wedding, let's try it out. Let's put the figure four on. See if it actually works. Hogan and Savage, they get their hands on some powder and they blind the members of the team with it.
The baby faces use powder.
Yes.
This reminds me a lot of remember the WrestleMania 9 match? It was Hogan and Beefcake versus Money Inc. And you had the back rakes and the eye gouges from Hogan. Like, this is just taking that to the furthest extent. And look, Savage was not what he used to be, even at this point, because this is before he
jumped off the cage.
Yeah, this is really before he started having big knee issues. But he could still go. But Hogan, by this point, it's kind of tough to watch.
Yeah, as a complete devoted and noted Hulkamaniac, even I was like, okay, dude, enough. Even by this point. But he would reinvigorate himself in a few months. We'll get there. Okay, Hogan and Savage, they both get to the down to the second tier where the other four men are waiting for them. And this is when Jimmy Hart slips a Taskmaster or something, but Hogan gets it and uses it on him instead. Turns out to be a chain, and Hogan starts choking Taskmaster with it. Luger and the Taskmaster, they start to double-team Hogan as Ming and the Barbarian start working on Savage. I didn't even know that they were here until I saw, oh, there's Ming and Barbarian. Hogan hits an elbow to fight out, and then he walks over to assist Savage. Hogan takes out Ming and the Barbarian and locks them in their part of the cage. Hogan then starts to get some offense in on Luger as Savage and the Taskmaster, they start exchanging some blows. Hogan takes the Taskmaster out of the cage and almost pushes him off the exposed side of it. Hogan takes him to the bottom part of the cage, and the Taskmaster tries to throw Hogan to the floor. Hogan kicks Taskmaster out to the floor, but Luger comes in with a shot to the back. They both work down the aisleway into the normal ring, and Hogan hits Taskmaster in the head with something that breaks. Hogan rolls him in the ring and hits the boot. He comes in with a clothesline as Luger and Savage, they're still going at it on the outside. So Hogan's like, fuck this, I'm going outside the cage, I'm just going to fight Kevin Sullivan
now,
out here.
Now the whole conceit of the match, now it just descends into pure anarchy.
Yeah. Hogan and the Taskmaster, they come back towards the cage and Hogan throws him into it. He runs over and takes out Luger to assist Savage. Savage then grabs Sullivan, but he gets hit in the head for his trouble. Hogan gets a back rake on Luger, and he slams his head into the guardrail. Hogan and Luger, they go back into the normal ring, and Hogan hits him with a clothesline. Savage and Sullivan, they come to the ringside, and Savage hits him with a big piece of wood from the structure. Or Hogan's taking Luger out on the inside of the ring, but Sullivan comes into the ring and hits a low blow on Hogan. They take Savage out, but Hogan recovers and pulls Luger to the outside. Hogan hits him with a chair, and Savage jumps to the outside to start double-teaming Luger.
So, we also have to mention, because this part's also ridiculous. The part, I don't know if it's here or afterwards, because this thing just blends together into a spectacular mess. When they move back into the bottom of the cage, which is the part that has the ring, outside of the two big guys, nobody else steps in to beat them up. But then there comes a point where somebody must have said this is going off script or it's just a disaster. Like, I think even some of the talent knew that this was not working out. But there's a point where the light switch hits on and it's like, oh, let's actually use the numbers game 20 minutes into this train wreck.
Luger recovers, grabs a chair, and takes both Savage and Hogan out with it. Savage and Hogan, they make their way back up and throw Hogan and Sullivan together, taking them both out. And this is when we get the appearances of the Gangsta and the Ultimate Solution. Now, Matt, look, we're not going to be covering it for years and years, so I'll go ahead and say, I was at No Holds Barred opening weekend.
I'm not watching that. I'm telling you right now, I'm not covering that.
Well, no, we're not gonna. No, we're not gonna cover it. No. But when we get to those matches, well, I mean, we'll have to talk about it at least. I can see why Hogan would make a call out to his buddy Tiny Lister and say, "Look, I have this huge spot. I would like you to be a part of it." I find it cool that he kind of includes his friends in these things. But by this point, this was 7 years removed from No Holds Barred. It just didn't have the same power.
No. I mean, look, that movie didn't really have much staying power to begin with. So the fact that they're trying to reprieve it makes them look more...
Well, the movie didn't, but the feud did. Like, the angle did. You know, they stretched that out for about 6-7 months.
Yeah, I mean,
at a time when we didn't do events every month.
We had Zeus main eventing SummerSlam, so, like...
Yep. Yeah. And Survivor Series of that year. And they main evented at that cage match that they did. The No Holds Barred, the match, the movie. You know, they had a huge cage match with Beefcake and Hogan taking on Savage and Zeus. That was the... blow off of that entire feud. It just did in WCW. I can see why Bischoff went with it. You know, he wanted to give. I mean, Hogan had creative control, so you do what you do.
Yeah, this is called whatever you say.
And this is where Hogan. This is where Hogan felt comfortable was bringing in his friends like this. But this just did not work. I'll be the first to say it. So they, you see, Gangsta and Ultimate Solution. They come out to the ring and they both start taking Savage and Hogan out. They work them back to the cage and throw them in the bottom ring. Hogan and Ultimate Solution, they're in the ring, but should I call him Gangsta or Zeus? But Gangsta and Savage, they're right behind him. The Solution is throwing Hogan all over the ring as Gangsta is taking Savage out on the other side. Hogan and Savage both start making a comeback and take both men out. Savage comes off the ropes, but Gangsta catches him in a bear hug. Hogan comes in for a save that only upsets Gangsta. Gangsta grabs him by the throat and takes Hogan down to the mat as the Solution slams Savage down. Savage comes off the top, but he gets caught and he just gets knocked down to the mat. Arn Anderson and Flair, hey, remember them? They're here. They finally escape their cage and make their way down. So now it's 4-on-2, and Savage and Hogan are getting quadruple teamed. Here comes Beefcake. He's here. He comes out to the ring with some powder and frying pans because you're going to take these guys out with frying pans,
yeah,
Matt.
Yeah, apparently frying pans are kryptonite. Because these take everybody out.
Yep. That allows Savage and Hogan to clean house. Luger gets back into the fray, and he takes Savage out from behind. Luger then puts on a weighted glove, but he takes Flair out instead in a spot that, my God, I mean, I don't know if it was supposed to look like he hit Flair on purpose, but Savage ducked and he didn't throw the punch until about at least 3 seconds later.
Oh, this is so poorly timed, and it gets fucked up twice, because not only does he duck too late, Luger pulls his punch. There's like a 2 second delay, and he hits Flair anyway.
Yeah.
Like, this is so bad, it's almost, like, it goes beyond comical.
Like, the crowd is cheering because they think Luger did this on purpose, you know, but he didn't. He just fucked up the spot. Savage then covers Flair and pins him to pick up the win for the Mega Powers at 25 minutes, 16 seconds. Matt, I am exactly with you when you say this was a fucking train wreck. And it's not even like one of those entertaining train wrecks. Like, we talk about matches all the time where, yeah, they're train wrecks, but at least they're fun to watch. Me, even being a huge Hulkamaniac, I didn't find this fun to watch. It was laborious to get through.
This is probably one of the worst main events you will ever see on a mainstream wrestling show.
Yep.
Because, for one, it's overbooked. Everything is illogical. The psychology is terrible. The world champion is the one that gets pinned. Like, I can't even give this a star rating. It's so bad. Like, I just want to give this match a big middle finger. Give it the Austin 316 salute.
Yeah, and I did find it interesting that, you know, after this, you know, Hogan would take a bit of a break off WCW pay-per-views. This was the blow off to the Dane, I guess, what is it? The Doom, Dungeon of Doom, I guess. This is the big blow off to that whole angle and everyone out to get Hulkamania. It was fitting because this was a mess. This is a mess of a match. You and I can come on and we can, you know, we've laughed a lot during this podcast for good reason. There are parts of this match that there you can kind of laugh at, like the end of it. But most of it is just, you don't understand the rules. And as you mentioned, everything's fucking overbooked anyway. This structure is beautiful to look at. It's a wonderful looking structure. But even if I were a fan who paid a ticket price to come see this, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, I feel like I would have been better off watching it at home, which is not what you want for a live crowd.
That's exactly right. So after the match, the Alliance is arguing in the ring. We see the announcers trying to figure out why Luger hit Flair instead of Savage. and Heenan's just pissed off that Hogan won yet again, which is probably Matt's feelings as well, as we go off the air. All right. Scale of 1 to 10, Matt, what do you give Uncensored 1996?
I feel like the back half of the show, especially the final two matches, are so laborious and terrible that it kind of nullifies any good I have to say about the opening. I think this goes to show that you can have a strong opening, but even those, when you have non-finishes or bad finishes, can put a stain on the totality of the show. I think this thing is a disaster. And it's hard to believe that 4 months from this, that wrestling would change forever and business would boom. Because this is the kind of thing that could have been the not just the Dungeon of Doom, this could have been the doom of an entire promotion. And that extends to a lot of the other things. The fact that Brutus Beefcake has a 15-minute match against DDP. You took a Sting Booker T match against the Road Warriors and overextended it to the point that the guys didn't even look like they were trying. Just a bad show all around. I'd have to think long and hard where this would rank as far as like worst pay-per-views of all time, but it's pretty freaking bad. So I'm gonna go with 3. And I will say a lot of that has to do with how bad the last two matches are.
All right. You're going to go 3. I'll be a little more kind. I found this pay-per-view to be pretty darn entertaining in so many ways. Now, the final match, I will completely grant you, is just a disaster. We talked about it. The Beefcake DDP match, it is what it is. Hogan's giving his friend a place in the pay-per-view, whatever, it's fine. I think it's good to see matches like that, though, to see when we start covering Page and him being the top of storylines with him taking on Savage and the NWO and things. It's fun to see people like him in these stages of their career. The opening match, glorious. I found it amazing, except for the end of it. The second match with Belfast Bruiser and Regal, again, really entertaining, but the end, once again, spoiled that match. The rest of the card, you can give or take, but the reason why I want to go slightly higher than you, Matt, is because I think the commentary in this event is very entertaining. I had a blast listening to Heenan and Rhodes go back and forth and Stravani just kind of taking their commentary in and trying to go with the actual storylines going on in the matches, and he really couldn't because those two were just too entertaining. But it's not going to be much higher. I'm going with a 5. I was entertained for the most part, but this is not something that, you know, I would pick up and watch again on the fly. So 5 out of 10 for Uncensored 96 for me. Next week, Matt, we get to our first granddaddy event of them all since we started talking wrestling on these airways. We're going to get to a WrestleMania. WrestleMania 12, a big, big part of the turning point of who was going to take the reins of the title from that point on. Oh boy, I definitely have feelings on it. What are you expecting when we talk about WrestleMania 12?
I feel like we should have had Adam on this show so you, I could listen to you two argue, and I could just sit back and provide commentary, because I know this is borderline tribal between the two of you.
It is. It is. Look, we don't argue enough on the fucking movie shows that we do. I have a story behind me actually watching this on pay-per-view with Adam actually being there, which we'll get to next week. I have fond memories of this pay-per-view, actually. I can't wait to rewatch it and talk to you about it. But until next week, when we get to WrestleMania 12, we'll see you at the matches.